listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight, we have a shocking broadcast. It's chilling, as a matter of fact. Just preparing it sent chills up my spine. And so you should be prepared for this. And you should have pen and paper by your side. You should record this broadcast if you can. And if you cannot, you can always order the tape. It's a broadcast everybody in America should hear. I have prepared you for these things for many years. And unfortunately, people still don't want to believe it. But equally unfortunate, it is true. Ladies and gentlemen, beginning in 1988, well, actually it began a long time before that, but I had not come to grips with all of this and was effectively silenced, and that was in 1976. When I attempted to communicate what I had learned while a member of the Office of Naval Intelligence and a member of the intelligence briefing team for the Commander-in-Chief of the United States Pacific Fleet, I was viciously attacked on several occasions and had to remain silent. I had no other choice. It was either continue to talk and be killed, and no one would ever know what it was that I had learned, or keep silent until I could figure out a way to do it so that no one could stop me. And that's what I did. In 1988, I put together a large packet of information, first-hand knowledge from documents that I had seen while serving with the Office of Naval Intelligence and the briefing team for the Commander-in-Chief of the United States Pacific Fleet, and information that I had gleaned from years of research based upon what I had seen in those documents. Put all of these things together in a package and sent them off to every single member of the United States Senate, every single member of the United States House of Representatives, the President, the Vice President, the director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the director of the Central Intelligence Agency, the United States Attorney General, and every member of the president's cabinet, all of the news networks, all of the television networks, about 25 of the major newspapers all over the United States, and about 50 around the world. Now, everybody had in their possession, everybody that was anybody, I thought, had in their possession pretty much a consensus of what it was that I knew. And the reason I did that was if all of a sudden I disappeared or was found dead, or even if I walked out of my porch and slipped on some ice and busted my own head wide open, no one would ever believe it was an accident. Everyone would believe that I was murdered because of this information, and therefore, I was safe. And I'm still safe. You wonder why nothing happens to me. The worst thing that our enemies can ever create is a martyr. You see, if I had never been an extremely public individual, I've been guests on all the major radio talk show hosts beginning back in 1988, all through 1989, 1990, 1991, until I put an end to it by refusing to be guests anymore, except on Alan Hanelman's show, because he's a friendly host. Most of them aren't. And I have my own radio broadcast. Any move to hurt me in any manner whatsoever that would not be a legitimate method or a legitimate outcome of some legitimate endeavor will be met with martyrdom. Tremendously dangerous and strong, active political movements always rise up around martyrs. And while I don't really want to be a martyr, if that's what history chooses for me to be, then I will be that martyr. But our enemies are not stupid. They try to come at you in a way that will demonize you in the eyes of the American public or the public of the world, so that whatever they do will seem to be legitimate. But my knowledge of the law has stymied them in that respect, because I've challenged them on every issue and they have defaulted. Therefore, they've lost. They've lost before they even began. And so it's sort of a stalemate. They're content to have warrants issued for my arrest, but not send anyone to effect that arrest. They cannot call me a fugitive because I'm not running from the law. I'm right here. You see, I've stymied them at every effort. They don't know what to do now. But the American public, since there is a warrant issued for my arrest, will believe that I'm some sort of criminal, at least most of the American public, even though I am not. In fact, it is my estimation that they, the vast numbers of the American public, the people of America who are sheeple actually, are the criminals bowing to tyranny, failing in their duty toward the Constitution, toward the Republic, toward all of us, and continuing to file and pay the tribute to their puppet masters every April the 15th. Even though not one of them can find any law anywhere that requires them to do so. I find that absolutely incredible. Just incredible. So, they're content with this sort of stalemate. They know that if I venture out, and if I get too brave, so to speak, that they're relying upon some stupid, ignorant local sheriff's deputy or police officer. And I'm not necessarily speaking about the people who live here in this county. I'm talking about if I'm driving through New Mexico and somebody who doesn't even know what's going on stops me because my taillight burnt out and I don't know about it, and then asks me for a driver's license, and I have to tell them that I don't have one because I'm not required to have a driver's license. I'm not a commercial driver. I'm not engaged in interstate commerce. And that will get his hackles up because he doesn't really understand the law. He just does what his supervisor tells him to do. And then he's going to want some identification, and I'm going to tell him that I don't have any because I don't have to have any. I am who I say I am unless you can prove that I'm not. You see, that's the way the law in this country works. I don't have to have identification. I am who I say I am unless you can prove that I am not. The burden of proof is upon you. But I don't tell lies. I tell people who I am. If they stop me, I tell them, this is who I am. If they don't choose to believe that, or they want some kind of proof, I don't have to furnish that. You see, I don't have to testify against myself. Giving an identification card to a police officer is testifying against yourself. Americans don't seem to understand these basic precepts of the law that our great-great-grandfathers knew by heart. And so they're betting that some local sheriff's deputy or local police officer is going to arrest me, in which case, if they attempt that, I'll have to shoot them, or they'll have to shoot me. And that's what the federal government is counting on. Then they can really demonize me by saying I murdered some police officer who was doing something he should never have been doing in the first place and was actually the one committing the crime against me. And I know all of you are scratching your head because you've been taught so many lies all your life. You think this is absolute total bullshit, but it's the absolute, complete, and total truth. You see, that's how badly we have been corrupted. And so I try not to get anybody injured. I don't want to hurt any police officer or sheriff's deputy or anybody else, for that matter, simply because they're ignorant or stupid, as the case may be. I've never wanted to hurt anybody in my life. In fact, when I came back from the Vietnam War, having gone over there really wanting to hurt people in the name of truth, justice, and the American way, thinking I was fighting for the Constitution and all this other crap that my head was stuffed with, I was stupid then. You see, I didn't know all these things all my life. I spent a good portion of my life being just as stupid as everybody else and just as ignorant and doing things that were just as dumb. But I made a mistake that was in all of our favor one day. I checked a form that said I was a Freemason because there was no box to check for DeMille. DeMille was the boys' organization for Freemasonry. When I was 13 years old, I was talked into joining by a good friend. They say nobody recruits you for these things, but that's one of the biggest bullshit lies that's ever been told. If nobody recruited anybody, there wouldn't be any. Because it's a secret organization, nobody even knows anything about it, unless somebody tells you about it. So I went, was initiated in the first degree, attended 3 meetings, as a matter of fact, including the first meeting where I was initiated. 3 meetings, all total. My father was transferred to Japan from Oklahoma, from Tinker Air Force Base. We lived in Midwest City. A good portion of my family is from Oklahoma and Oklahoma City. That's why the Oklahoma City bombing really made me so angry. Made me even more angry when people tried to say that patriots and militia members and me are the hour of the time, or people who believed in the Constitution were responsible for it. You wouldn't believe how many reporters and journalists' ears I totally fried when they called me, trying to suck me into their soundbite bullshit demonization programs right after the Oklahoma City bombing. Probably about in excess of 500, to tell you the truth. The phone was ringing off the wall. I'm not going to tell you what I told them, because I can't say it over the air. But I was blunt and rude and nasty to all of those lying, stinking, subversive bastards who call themselves objective members of the press. That's why I have my own radio broadcast and my own newspaper and my own huge website. That's why I write books and publish books. Do all the things that, gee, we're supposed to be too dumb to do. We're just lonely, helpless, scared people, and I'm just one man, and I shouldn't be able to do all this stuff, but I am, and I'm trying to serve as an example for all of you who like to use those things for an excuse, because when you look at me and see I'm just an ordinary guy, and I can do these things, so can you, and now you can't hide behind that excuse anymore. You see? That's why I do it. And so, years ago, I decided to tell the world what I knew. After I'd sent all these packages out to everybody that I have told you about, I began telling the world loud. Every place that I could speak, I spoke. And on every radio show that I could get on, I got on it. And was immediately attacked from all fronts. All fronts. Well, that was okay with me. But one of the things that I said that people thought was so absolutely ridiculous, besides all of the other things that have already come to pass, and the things that are staring you in your face and jumping down your throat right now, and there's still people walking around like none of it is happening. I mean, just totally lost in fantasy land, not realizing that the park is closed, the rides aren't working, and their e-ticket has expired. And yes, despite the fact that they look around and Disneyland is so clean and beautiful, there really are hookers walking up and down Anaheim Boulevard. You cannot escape from reality, Myrna Udall. And Senator John McCain is not going to save us from anything. In fact, if he's elected president, he will destroy this country. Because he's the real Manchurian candidate. Tortured and brainwashed by communist Chinese professional brainwashers for 5 years. 5 years. He gave in. He ratted on his fellow prisoner of war. He signed confessions. He made public statements on camera, deriding and condemning the United States Navy and the United States of America. And he received medical treatment in fine hospitals that no other prisoner of war ever received. And some of you out there really, honestly and truly thinking about making this man our president? Remember what I said about this being the communist China's year? If you even give this man half a chance, communist China will rule the world. That's the goal anyway. Eventually, no matter who you elect, unless it's somebody really off the wall, we're going to end up under a totalitarian socialist world government that moves eventually into communism anyway. That's the plan. That's the goal. But one of the things that I told you was that there were going to be shootings in schoolyards, in schools, in shopping malls, in McDonald's, in fast food restaurants, all over the country, and these would continue until guns were so demonized that the American people gave them up willingly. Well, all these things came to pass, but we're still not willing to give up our guns, and this has them in a quandary, which means something terrible is about to happen. And I told you that all of these people, whether they were adults or children or whatever, would be current or ex-mental patients on some kind of psychotropic drug or antidepressant drug, such as Prozac, that they would claim to hear voices in their head, and that they would either try to attempt suicide, or if they were caught in the act of trying to attempt suicide and weren't able to do it, they would try to provoke law enforcement or whoever to kill them. Well, most of them have succeeded in committing suicide. Some of them were captured before they could actually do it. Tonight I'm going to tell you the story of one young man, a child actually. His name is Kipland Kinkle. Recently, Frontline did a feature story on this episode, but Frontline left out a lot of things. And Frontline did not report it honestly, although I really believe that the reporter giving us the story thought that he was reporting honestly. He doesn't know what I know. He's probably never heard me speak. I can tell you for a fact he does not listen to this broadcast, doesn't even own a shortwave radio. Certainly doesn't live in the Round Valley of Arizona. Kip Kinkle was the son of teachers. His mother and father were both teachers, pretty famous teachers, actually. Bill and Faith Kinkle, who lived in a place called Shangri-La, right outside of Eugene, Oregon. Kip attended Thurston High School. He had a sister. He had problems most of his young life, stemming directly from his mother and father's desire for him to excel in school. Well, he wasn't so good in school. He had dyslexia. Took him a long time to learn to read, no matter how hard he tried. He was not particularly athletic, but his father was. So was his sister and his mother. I mean, they all excelled except for him, and so he was always being put down by just about everybody. They'll tell you that they never did that, but that's baloney and you all know it. Anybody who ever was reared in a family like that, you know what happens to somebody that doesn't fit in. No matter how much you love them, they just get criticized to death until they feel that they don't belong. And so he began to look for other things to do. And he found other things to do. They got him in trouble. Not big trouble. Most of the things that Kip Kinkle got in trouble for and was just thoroughly demoralized over were things that in my youth nobody would have even thought about. And in fact, me and many people I knew did some of the things that Kipland Kinkle did, and it was no big deal. See, when I was a boy, when you have conflicts with other students and you get pushed into a corner and the only way out is to have a fist fight with the bully, we didn't get in trouble. In fact, if I went home and told my dad I was in a fist fight with the school bully, the first thing he would ask me is, who won? And if I said the bully won, then I was in trouble with my dad. Nowadays, you get in a fist fight at school, that's big trouble, and it goes on your record, and you can get suspended, and all kinds of things that never happened to us when we were young. You see, these people who run the world now, and who run the schools now, and who run society now, and run communities now, think that they're going to eliminate human nature. And they're not going to do it. And these things are going to continue. All they're doing is ruining people's lives. Well, they made a big mistake. Instead of working this out and just letting Kipling be Kipling and stop trying to make him excel at things that he obviously was not very good at. Some people are not good at athletics. His father actually forced him to go out for the football team at Thurston High School. This is high school football, ladies and gentlemen. Kipling Kinkle weighed 120 pounds. I played football in high school. And I can tell you right now, anybody who weighs 120 pounds and gets out on a football field in any high school football game is committing suicide. But yet he had to do it to please his father and please the coach. And he wasn't very good at football. And he got creamed continually. This is the kind of things that he was put through. And so he hated his father. He never admitted it. Even after he killed his father, he claimed that he loved him. And I'm telling you right now, Kipling Kinkle hated his father. He wasn't going to admit it because that's not something you admit. They sent him to a psychologist, Dr. Jeffrey Hicks, who owned guns, Glocks in particular, and talked about guns and went through hypnotherapy sessions with young Kip. And had his family doctor prescribe Prozac for him to take. So here's Kipling now, going to a psychologist who openly, during these sessions, has admitted to talking to Kipling about guns, talking about Glocks in particular, made Kipling want to own a Glock. In fact, he became obsessed with guns after he began attending sessions with this psychologist, Dr. Jeffrey Hicks. On Prozac now. And he began to make explosives. And when he would get angry at someone, he would go down to the local quarry and set off these explosives. He told Dr. Jeffrey Hicks that he was doing this. And Dr. Hicks never, ever told a single soul, not even his parents, that he was going down to the quarry and setting off explosives, homemade explosives. In fact, Kipling Kinkle became an expert at making homemade bombs. He pestered his parents and made life at home holy hell until his father bought him a Glock. Two rifles. And Kip, on his own, collected a whole bunch of other guns and rifles and all kinds of things. He listened to Marilyn Manson music. One tune he played over and over and over again, and the only lyrics in the tune are, "No forgiveness, no salvation. No forgiveness, no salvation. No forgiveness, no salvation." And another one, "Shoot, I want to shoot, shoot. I want to shoot, shoot, shoot. Shoot, I want to shoot, shoot. I want to shoot, shoot, shoot." And he played these two songs over and over again until it almost literally drove his mother crazy. This young man was under the influence of some very powerful forces, one of which was brainwashing. One day he went to a party at someone's house, and another student stole a gun from the student's father, whose home they were having the party at. The next morning, Kipland purchased that gun for a little over $100 from the student who had stolen it. I don't know if Kip knew that the gun was stolen or not, but he purchased it. The man that the gun was stolen from, the father of the student who had had the party at his home, called the school and reported the gun was stolen and that there had been a party with students of the school at his home the night before, and he believed it was one of those students who had stolen the pistol. And so school officials got a list of the names of the students who had attended and began calling them in one by one. Kipland was called in and was visibly upset, could not look the coach in the eye or any of the officials who were questioning him. And so he just flat out told them, "I have the gun, it's in my locker." They went and confiscated the gun, they called the police, came, arrested him, put him in handcuffs, put him in the patrol car, took him downtown. They called his father to come and get him. His father came and got him. And only God knows what transpired in that car on the way home. But when they arrived home, Kip Kinkle went upstairs, got his rifle, came downstairs, shot his father in the back of the head and killed him. He then waited several hours for his mother to come home, talking to friends on the phone in the meantime, and then killed his mother. Now, Kip really loved his mother. He killed his mother because he could not face her after having killed his father and felt that that was the only thing that he could do. According to his own testimony, he met her in the garage, and as she was walking toward the stairs to go up into the house, he said, "I love you, Mom," and then shot her in the back of the head. And then shot her over and over again in various places until she was dead. Probably she was dead with the first shot. But no one really knows. I don't know for sure. And then he sat down and wrote a note. And the note said, and listen to this very carefully, here's what he wrote in the note. Quote, "I have just killed my parents. I am a horrible son. I wish I had been aborted. My head just doesn't work right. God damn these voices inside my head," end quote. Now, I'm going to say this again for you. For those of you who are religious, I am not blaspheming. I am telling you what this young man wrote in this note, and it's important that you know what he wrote and for me not to censor it. He said, quote, "I have just killed my parents. I am a horrible son. I wish I had been aborted. My head just doesn't work right. God damn these voices inside my head," end quote. He then put on a CD and set it to repeat of the music from the modern movie Romeo and Juliet, very violent movie about teenagers who just can't live for 5 minutes without some sort of violence, and in the end, he and his girlfriend commit suicide. You know the classic tale, but if you've never seen this movie, you have no idea what children are watching and identifying with. He really identified with this music, with this movie, and with the music. And he put on that CD, and he set it for repeat, and turned the music up as loud as it would go. Then he loaded his rifle with 50 rounds of ammunition. It's a .22 rifle that had a 50-round clip. He loaded his Glock, several other weapons, and took along a whole bunch of extra ammunition. Now listen to me very carefully. He put on a trench coat. He put on a trench coat See, nobody talks about these things. Nobody told you that he was on Prozac. Nobody told you he was under the care of a psychologist who taught him about guns and who knows what else. Nobody told you he was hearing voices inside his head. Nobody told you he wore a trench coat. Then he went to school. He walked into the school. He told one student to leave because something bad was going to happen. When the student started questioning him, he just turned around and shot him. Walked into the cafeteria and began shooting students. He shot a total of 28 students. Two died. 26 were injured. He kept firing that 22 with those 50 rounds in it until it ran out of ammunition. And then he tried to pull his Glock out to kill himself. When he was tackled by other students, the Glock was taken from his hand after he fired a couple of shots. And then they began to beat him. While they were beating him, he begged them to kill him. He kept screaming, "Just kill me. Please, just kill me. Just kill me." When the police arrived and got a hold of him, they took him outside, and one officer was with him while the other were investigating and helping with the medical teams. He pulled a knife on the officer, attacked the officer with the knife, and he kept yelling over and over again, "Just kill me. Please kill me. Just shoot me. Please shoot me." Because his brainwashing said he had to die. He had to commit suicide. That's the pattern that I told you about. Everything that I told you about in 1988 was going to happen, happened with this young man. Everything. So take a little break and think about this, and I'm going to be back with another shocker. Real shocker.
Stay awake, don't rest your head, don't lie down upon your bed, while the moon drifts in the skies, stay.
Listen very carefully, ladies and gentlemen. What you are about to hear is very disturbing. It is the actual interrogation tape from the Eugene, Oregon police. Their initial interrogation of Kipland Kinkle without counsel or lawyer present. It's very disturbing what you're going to hear. And there's one phrase that he said that at the end I play it over and over again for about five times. So you're going to hear it repeated at the end so that you clearly understand that he echoed in his own voice what he wrote in his note. Pay attention. If you have children in the room, I would recommend that you send them out.
Conversation with the last name of Kinkel, K-I-N-K-E-L, first of Kiplin, K-I-P-L-A-N-T.
Tell me what happens when we get home.
Chrissy.
Phones are open, folks. 520-333-4578. 520-333-4578. Pretty shocking, huh? You see, I knew many years ago that these things were going to happen. Warned you, told you exactly what would happen, what the symptoms would be, who the people would be who would do it, and why these things would happen. If only someone had listened. Good evening. You're on the air.
Good morning. Hello, Bill. Bill, I'm Walt up in Montana.
Uh-huh.
And I can't hardly hear you. I catch up a word now and then. There's
we're live on the internet.
Well, I don't have a computer. I'm sorry about that.
Well, we don't have too much time left in the broadcast, so let's get to what you want to say, and so we can get somebody else in here.
I just wanted to tell you that there's a lot of interference from overlapping stations.
Forget that. I told you people, don't do that to me, okay? Nothing I can do about it. 520-333-4578. If you got something to talk about this broadcast, then please call. If not, go do something. Go to bed, go work on your car, I don't care. Good evening, you're on the air.
Hi, Bill. This is Marshall in Houston. On a number of occasions here in my own town, and I've just happened on this in other cities that I happen to be in doing work, I would happen upon people that would be laying on the ground, curled up in a fetal position. And when I got to talking to them to find out what was the matter with them, they were coming down off of one of the psychotropic drugs that they had been put on.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked to other people about this, and they've witnessed the same thing. And so it seems to me that this is at an epidemic level.
Sure it is.
All over the country.
Yeah, you're right.
I had a bad ear infection. I went to my doctor, hadn't been in there in 10 years, in his office. And I'm sitting there, and one of the drug dealers comes in, and he's got a bunch of these sample boxes tucked under his arms with Prozac. You could see the label on the box. And then I go to see the doctor, and I'm sitting there, and he writes me a prescription for my ear infection, and then he just goes on into a conversation. Well, you ever feel like you're having one of those bad days or nothing's working right and all this other? He starts going on, and you want to try some Prozac. And I looked at him, and I said, you've got to be kidding. And they are indoctrinating the medical profession at every level to push this stuff on the people.
I know.
And I pray to God that the people that are listening to this program will wake up and start doing something about this. And I did hear some parents, concerned parents in Colorado, were asking for an end of the use of psychotropic drugs.
All they have to do is say, you're not going to drug my children. Screw off, get out of here, take your children out of school, and homeschool them.
Yeah.
Simple.
But a lot of people...
want somebody else to do it for
right.
them.
Right.
They have to do it.
A lot of people aren't going to put themselves in that position.
Pretty stupid, huh? It's their children.
I guess they deserve what they get, huh?
What they're telling me when they do that is that they don't love their children. They don't give a damn about their children. Yeah, I would die for my children.
There's a
I got to let you go. I got to let other people in here.
Well,
we're up to the end. Come on, guys. 520-333-4578. We only have a few minutes left in the hour. I want to let as many people in here as possible. You can talk tomorrow night if you want. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi, Bill. It's Louise in Chicago.
Hi, Louise.
I wanted to tell you in regards to that there was something that I left you email about, and it was something from Phyllis Schlafly's site. They were apparently teaching something called deaf education at Columbine High School. As far back as 1986?
Yes.
This certainly looks like an indoctrination program.
Well, it is.
I know it is, but I mean they're so overt about it now.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I didn't tell all of you is that, I'll leave that for tomorrow night. I want to talk about that tomorrow. We're going to talk about this again tomorrow night.
Okay.
Thanks, Louise. Thanks for calling. 520-333-4578 is the number. If you've got something that you want to add to this. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah, this is John in Texas.
John, I need you to talk a lot louder. Put that phone right in front of your mouth and talk loud.
Okay, this is John in Texas. A little bit off the subject, but I was wondering.
No, forget it. 520-333-45 said, this is not the Alex Jones show. Okay? This is not the Alex Jones show. Good evening. You're on the air.
Phil, what was the name of the shrink that pulled this mind-bending job on this child?
Dr. Hicks.
Hicks?
Yeah.
What was his first name again, sir?
Yeah, just a second, and I'll give it to you. It was, Dr. Jeffrey Hicks.
These are the people we got to remember for the trials, Bill.
Yeah, and the doctor that prescribed the Prozac, the family doctor, on recommendation of Dr. Jeffrey Hicks, was named Dr. Geisler. So, if you live up there, you know to stay away from these people.
Yes, sir. Well, I'll get off. Let somebody else get in there.
Thanks for calling.
Right.
520-333-4578 is the number. And if you've got something to add or put in here, then we need to hear from you. If you want to talk about something else that has nothing to do with this broadcast, forget it, because we are not doing that. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi, Bill. This is Anna from Michigan. I just want to comment on his name. I think that parents should be really careful about not to give their children funny names like Kip Kinkle. It sounds too much like Chris Kinkle. Chris Kringle.
Oh, no. Well, children don't make those kind. Don't. That has nothing to do with anything. But, no, you should not give your children names that might cause them to be ridiculed by other children. Children are cruel to each other.
Yes, they are.
Really are. When you go into school, you know, they can be just absolutely, terribly, viciously cruel to each other because, you know, your name sounds funny or it's an unusual name or you're wearing something that your parents made you wear that, you know, that they think is stupid or something. It's just, I remember when I was at school, these things happen.
That's true, and that's why a good reason for homeschooling, because the children have a lot of influence on your own child.
Yeah, it's also a good reason for fathers to teach their sons to fight and for mothers to teach their daughters how to get over on the girls that might be putting them down or trying to make them look stupid or silly.
That's true. I'll tell
you, when I was a boy, all it took was if in the first day of school, if you had the guts to walk up to the biggest bully in the school and smack him right in the nose as hard as you could, nobody ever bothered you ever again.
I work in the schools a lot, Bill, though. There's so much meanness and hatred there between a lot of students.
That's because they're allowed to get away with it. See, when I was a boy, if somebody said that kind of stuff to me, I'd punch them in the nose, and they didn't do it anymore.
Yeah, that's true. I have to agree with you.
And they're not allowed to do that now. They're not allowed to solve their differences in a normal human way.
Sad.
And if people aren't punished for doing these terrible things to other students, and if you can't walk up and punish them for doing it to you, a bloody nose never hurt anybody.
I'll tell you, teachers are afraid, administrators are afraid, parents are afraid, and students are afraid.
Well, they are. They're stupid cowards is the way I put it. Listen, I got to let you go.
All right. Bye.
Thanks for calling. Well, that's it, folks. Good night. God bless each and every single one of you. Good night, Annie Poo and Allison. I love you. We will be talking about this subject again tomorrow night. This will be the subject tomorrow night.
Do you see the noses growing? Wonder where the truth is going.
When you wish upon a star, makes no difference who you are. Anything your heart desires will come to you. If your heart is in your dream, no request is too
WBCQ, Monticello, Maine, USA.